Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I am Maria Auler, Financial Analyst for Intersemente. With me here today for our fireside chat is Paulo Diniz, our Chief Executive Officer, and Marco Zangari, our Chief Financial Officer. The presentation will be followed by a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, you may send it via webcast. The presentation is available through the webcast link that has been provided to you in your registration email. Before we start, please note that on this call, you'll hear discussions of non-IFRS financial measures, including EBITDA, adjusted EBITDA, and margins. Reconciliation of these non-IFRS measures to the most directly comparable IFRS financial measures is contained in the accompanying material that supports this call, or the financial report, which is available at the investor section of our website, as well as on the Singapore Exchange website. During this call, we will make forward-looking statements about events and circumstances that have not yet occurred, include outlook and projections of Intersemente's operating activities, and their anticipated financial impact on our business and financial results for 2023 and beyond. These statements are based on management's current expectation and actual results, and future events may differ materially due to risks and uncertainties, including those detailed from time to time in filings Intersemente makes with the Singapore Exchange Commission. Intersemente disclaims any obligation to update information contained in these forward-looking statements, whether because of new information, future events, or otherwise. Please refer to the Intersemente first quarter financial report for basic discussions of the relevant risks and uncertainties. All public information is available on our website. Before starting our chat, I would like to emphasize management's decision to classify South Africa and Mozambique business segments as discontinued operations in accordance with International Accounting IFRS 5, since it's highly probable that those operations will be sold within a 12-month period. Therefore, the respective assets and liabilities are presented as current in the balance sheet in specific line items. In the profit or loss statement, the results from those operations are also segregated in a specific line item. Nevertheless, considering that, for the time being, Intersemente continues to manage South Africa and Mozambican operations. You will note that on the press release and on this call, we are including and present Africa operations with the consolidated continuing operations, Brazil and Argentina. And now, moving to our chat. Let me kick the ball here and ask you, Paulo, to give us a quick overview of Intersemente's first quarter.
Maria, Zangari, and everyone, very good morning to you all. No doubt that the first quarter of this year continued to present challenging issues to all companies, such as managing inflation and high interest rates, besides ensuring resilience as the world, and particularly our core markets, Brazil and Argentina, faced unprecedented uncertainty and change. Despite this challenging environment, we continue to deliver solid operational results, keeping our focus on assuring continuity and consistency. In the first quarter of this year, we posted a volume of 4 million tons, slightly down the volume book in the first quarter of last year, 4.1 million tons. Average ex-works price was up almost 9% to $86 per ton, so that net sales reached $404 million in the quarter, an increase of 10% in comparison to the same quarter of last year. At the same time, even though we are starting to see some cost elements to retract, costs continue to be pressured by inflation, so that average cash cost, including freights, went up by 19% and reached $71 per ton, also showing that inflationary pressures were not fully passed to prices. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA reached $87 million. This is a 5% decline over first quarter of last year. An EBITDA margin of 22% was 3 percentage points lower in comparison to the same period of last year. Cash flow from operating activities came at a negative $31 million, which was expected as a result of working capital movements, reflecting a typical seasonality in the beginning of the year, and moreover, the relevant credit crunch that took place in the Brazilian market, with some relevant companies filing for RJ, Recuperação Judicial. Free cash flow in the quarter was penalized further by higher CapEx disbursement due to a carryover of an environmental efficiency project in Brazil, and mainly by interest disbursements in the quarter, driven by a higher debt position in Argentina. On the other hand, it was partially offset by cash inflows, mainly from the divestment of Ameria, our operation in Egypt. As a result, the free cash flow reached negative $15 million in the quarter, worsening $44 million compared to the first quarter of last year, when it was negative in $6 million. Cash flow from financial activities was penalized by dividends paid by Luma Negra in the quarter, $9 million, although increased by the new debt issued in Argentina, $133 million of Class 1 negotiable obligations. Therefore, net debt came at $1,527 million, that is 6% higher than the fourth quarter of last year, implying a leverage ratio of 3.2 times, considering the last 12 months, not just EBITDA. So, in summary, these would be my quick highlights and lowlights for the quarter.
Excellent, and thanks for this overview, Paul. When you talk about a top line of $404 million in the quarter, we are always curious about volumes and prices in the different geographies. Sangari, perhaps you can share some insights on this.
Yes, thank you, Maria, and good morning, everyone. Well, let's start by refreshing that the $404 million of sales were the result of a 9% average price increase year over year to $86 per ton, as Paulo mentioned, and shown on page 7. Which more than offset the volume drop of 1% year over year to hopefully 4.1 million tons. Now, looking at the different clusters, starting in Brazil, as shown on page 4, we see that Intercement Brazil reached volumes of cement and clinker of hopefully 2 million tons, representing a 2.6% decline in the quarter, year over year, while cement sales were slightly reduced by 0.9% in the quarter. So it performed slightly better than the overall industry that recorded a 1.2% contraction. Main reason for the market demand retraction was basically the low economic growth associated with current tightening monetary policy. On the other hand, despite the volume retraction, Intercement Brazil reached sales of $164 million, an 8% increase year over year due to the commercial strategy focused on portfolio optimization with a growing and widespread customer base, in addition to an increase year over year in the average price in all regions and mainly in the Northeast and South, with approximately 20 and 13% respectively. In Argentina, despite the poor macroeconomic conditions, including an inflation of over 109%, the highest in the last decades, households continue to allocate any income left into construction as a way to preserve the currency power. This mindset supports the growth of the bulk cement segment, driven by a higher level of activity in private construction, coupled with an increase in public works. Therefore, in this first quarter, Loma Negra posted a volume of 1.5 million tons, with an increase of 4% year over year, as shown on page 5. Price-wise, despite the high inflation, Loma Negra was able to keep a price level of hopefully $107 per ton, an increase of 9% year over year. As a result, sales increased 20% to $190 million US dollars. Now, in terms of the African cluster, considering that we have divested the Egyptian operation last January, we have excluded it from the comments and comparison base. As you can see on page 6 of the presentation, we sold 500,000 tons in Africa in the quarter, which was 11% below the previous year. In Mozambique, volumes contracted due to the effects of the cyclone Freddy and the heavy rains that occurred in February and March, as well as due to a weaker demand across the country on the back of lower disposable income pressured by higher inflation. Meanwhile, in South Africa, volumes decreased mainly due to lower retail market, reflecting a low GDP growth environment, besides above average precipitation during that period. Now, talking about prices at our African operations, our Ex Works prices kept recovering and reached an average of $98 per ton, 3% up year over year in US dollar terms, despite the devaluation of the rand, the local currency in South Africa, reaching 18%. So disregarding it on a like-for-like basis, prices increased by 13% in the quarter compared to last year, following a similar pattern of price increases in local currency in both countries. However, this pricing movement was not enough to offset the volume drop and the devaluation, so sales decreased 11%. But excluding Forex impact, sales would have remained at the same level of last year, as shown on page 7 as well.
Thank you, Zangari. It was clear that the favorable price trend remained in place and Intercement was able to manage its top line in a very healthy way. In addition to pricing, closer management of prices and costs for any cement company in this high inflation and high interest environment is also very important. Paulo, how this challenge has affected Intercement's EBITDA generation?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, and I guess we can see that on page 8, average cash cost of $71 per ton represented an increase of 19% year over year. Besides thermal energy costs, mainly petcoke costs, which continue to be at a high level, other cost elements were also inflated, including raw materials, freight, electricity, and manpower. Therefore, overall cost elements persist to stay at a level higher than we expected. However, and on the positive note, we should also say that petcoke prices are showing a continuous reduction, although still at a high level. In fact, last month, the U.S. Gulf coke dropped further from $152 per ton in December to $112 per ton in May, which is a cost reference not seen since May 21, when it cost 2 times more in comparison to 2020. Consequently, and again on page 9, the adjusted EBITDA margin of 22% represented a compression of 3 percentage points compared to the first quarter of last year, which the great operational performance in Argentina partially offset by Brazil. Therefore, adjusted EBITDA came at $87 million in the quarter, and despite representing a 5% decrease year over year, it continues in a good pace for the first quarter of the year. By the way, if one excludes Forex impact, adjusted EBITDA would have reached $126 million, a figure much higher than the first quarter of last year, with Argentina and Africa showing expansion. But talking, taking a look now on a country-by-country basis, we can say that in Brazil, price increases mitigate the volume drop and cost pressure, so that Intercement Brazil EBITDA was at $29 million in the first quarter, so a 9% increase year over year, with the EBITDA margin of 18%, basically the same level of the first quarter of last year. In Argentina, the hyperinflationary environment and high thermal energy pulled Luma Negra to post an adjusted EBITDA of $50 million, so a 9% drop year over year, despite excellent volumes and great prices. Adjusted EBITDA margin went to 26 also, this 26% being a considerable reduction in comparison to the same quarter of last year. Finally, in the African Southern Cone Cluster, better prices and strict cost control were not enough to offset the volume decline in the region, especially in Mozambique, as it was mentioned by Zangari, was heavily impacted by the strong cyclone Freddy, which reached the country on February 24 and stayed until March the 12th, leaving 165 deaths and more than 100 people dislocated, besides the huge damage in the transportation systems, with more than 5,000 kilometers of highways affected. Therefore, Africa's adjusted EBITDA came at $7.8 million, just slightly below the $8 million registered in the first quarter of last year, offsetting the rand devaluation in the period. Also important to note that adjusted EBITDA margin was up by 2 percentage points and reached 16%. Fortunately, as we keep saying, difficulties in one country are offset by the other. At the end, even if it's too premature to say that cost inflation is losing steam, we can certainly say that we continue to manage properly our price and go-to-market policy to mitigate that in the different markets under the current macro context.
Thanks, Paulo. Interesting to see that despite the unfavorable cost rebound and uncertainties on the macro front, Tercement was able to keep a robust top line of $404 million and a healthy EBITDA level of $87 million in the quarter. Moving now to the below-the-line results, let me ask you, Zangari, what can we say about this first quarter?
Yes, sure. As shown on page 11, in this quarter, the cash flow from operating activities was impacted by the seasonal fluctuation of working capital that was amplified by the credit crunch in Brazil following the Americanas episode in January, leading to a negative $31 million. CapEx disbursement was also higher than first quarter last year due to a carryover of an environmental efficiency project in Brazil. On the other hand, we paid lower income taxes that amounted to $7 million in the first quarter, posting a decrease of 18% in comparison to the last year due to lower taxable profit, mainly in Argentina, where deductible financial expenses increased.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Zangari. Besides working capital moves, CapEx, and taxes, any other movement below the line, including financial flows, that you could give us some additional color?
Definitely, Maria. As we mentioned during our last earnings call, Loma Negra in January paid up $9 million of dividends, and in February issued 100 $33 million of local bonds with 18-month maturity and prepaid some local revolving debt maturing in the short term. In addition to it, we had mentioned that the holdco settled the bilateral loan with BNP Paribas amounting to $13 million and also paid the bond's coupon $16 million. Additionally, we anticipated the payment of $39 million of the ICP debentures principal amortization due in June this year. Now, looking at the interest expenses disbursement, we see it totaled $33 million during the quarter, an increase of $10 million year over year, mostly in Argentina, driven by the growth in the total debt position that was virtually zero in the first quarter last year. Reflecting all those cash movements, as shown on page 12, Intercement ended the first quarter with a consolidated cash position of $183 million and a net debt of $1,527 million, posting an increase of almost 6% over our net debt position at the end of 2022. This was mostly driven by the Brazilian real appreciation of 2.6%, since the BRL is the currency of 55% of the total gross debt, and also by the payment of dividends and interest, mostly from Argentina and Holdco. As a result, Intercement posted a financial leverage of 3.2 times last 12-month adjusted EBITDA, similar to the level we reached by the end of the previous year.
Thank you, and just great to see that. Despite the existing limitations, Intercement continues to manage properly its cash flow, which included dividends payment by Luma Negra. Paulo, I know that Intercement does not provide any quantitative guidance, but perhaps you could share a quick view for the rest of the year, please.
Well, Maria, I wish I could have a crystal ball now. In Argentina, we are facing not only a difficult economic environment, but also an unpredictable presidential period. Therefore, some small but relevant infrastructure projects that are going on, such as the Aeropark airstrip in Buenos Aires, the highways Route 3, Route 5, and Route 7, and some other projects could face some discontinuity in case the government in power concludes that there is no more chance for a Peronist candidate. Therefore, economic experts see a range of -3% to -1% for the GDP growth. In terms of Brazil, difficult to predict how this new fiscal framework by the government will play with the current high interest rates, which continue to harm the construction industry, especially the mid and low end of the population, including the low-income house program Minha Casa, Minha Vida. On the top of that, there is a fierce competition in the southeast region of Brazil by the largest players, a region with the biggest market and purchase power, but with the lowest selling price. Therefore, industry projections go from a negative growth of -2% up to 1% growth. Therefore, we can see that the old saying, prepare for the worst and hope for the best, is the way to go. Consequently, we continue to pursue our view for the year of defending the position we reached in 2022, and, if feasible, do slightly better.
Thank you, Paulo. And now I guess that we can break for Q&A. Let me warm up this discussion with a couple of questions before we take questions from participants. As usual, let me just start by asking you, Zangari, the cash breakdown among the different perimeters at the end of the first quarter, please.
Certainly, Maria. As shown on page 11, We ended the quarter with a consolidated cash position of $183 million. And out of that amount, we had $28 million at Intercement Brazil, $93 million at Loma Negra in Argentina, $21 million at the African cluster, and $41 million at the corporate level or holdcos.
Thank you. On another topic, in the last few months, we announced an important change at the C-suite level of Intercement. Paulo, could you comment on this new structure, please?
Well, not only at the C-suite level. In fact, in order to enhance our governance, the chairman position of Mover, our controlling shareholder, and the Intercement were decoupled. Therefore, Rony Vaz Moreira was nominated as chairman of the board for Intercement. Additionally, I myself was nominated the chief executive officer for Intercement, while Marco Zangari, who was head of planning and corporate finance, replaced me as chief financial officer. Therefore, all these moves aim to enhance our corporate governance and assure continuity and consistency to our operations, besides being increasingly active in financial markets and capital solutions.
Okay, and just expanding this last question, the company also announced the hiring of advisors to support it in evaluating alternatives for its capital structure. Could you also comment on that?
Yes, Intercement has hired Julian Loki as its financial advisor and E. Munoz and White & Case as its local and international legal advisors, respectively, in order to support the company in advance an overall constructive solution to address its capital structure. You know that despite the excellent operational performance in recent years, allow Intercement to reduce its leverage substantially and to be among the highest EBITDA margins for the cement companies worldwide, there is a need of further adjustments to enhance our capital structure. Also waiting on this decision, as we said, is the adverse macroeconomic scenario that persists in Brazil and Argentina, the company's main markets. These markets have been suffering from a combination of high interest rates and inflation, as well as restrictive foreign exchange regulations in Argentina, and also low GDP growth in Brazil. As a consequence, despite the continuous efforts since mid of last year, Intercement has not been able to complete its refinancing plan. Therefore, an external fresh look into our capital structure indebtedness can be of great value to all shareholders and stakeholders.
Thanks, Paulo. It's very clear that the company is doing its best to meet its financial obligations in the healthiest way possible. Following the same topic, are there any updates on the strategic decision for the African assets, that is, South Africa and Mozambique?
Maria, according to what we have said recently, JP Morgan was engaged to assess the strategic options available for our African assets. Although different alternatives have been considered, after the divestment of Egypt, the sale of the assets in Southeastern Africa became an option more attractive for us, and now we are positive that it's likely to be executed within the next quarters.
Thanks. And now that Intercement has charged external advisors, where do we stand with regards to the trend for bonds refinancing?
Well, Maria, it's no news that the company tried hard to structure the bond refinancing since mid of last year, although the progress was not there. Therefore, with the support of our external advisors, we are confident that new ways to manage our indebtedness and refinance our bonds will be explored in the benefit of all stakeholders. However, at this moment, it's very difficult to say anything, not only because the advisors are still doing their diagnostic work, but also because in a dynamic environment as the one that we are facing nowadays, anything that was yesterday, perhaps not today, and certainly will not be tomorrow. At the same time, regardless of the diagnostic results, what we can say is that the company will keep its stakeholders posted of any new development on this front.
And we know that the company has bonds interest on July 15th. And before that, in June, the company has the debentures interest and amortization that are due. Can you share the company's next steps on these payments?
Yes, with regards to the June maturities, also considering the credit crunch that took place in Brazil following the episode of some big companies filing for RJ, I should say that Intersement is having active discussions with the banks. Naturally, that these discussions are linked to the work that the advisors are doing on the assessment of Intersement capital structure. Therefore, when I hear comments or questions about next steps on at this moment, I really want to emphasize that 360 degrees work by the advisors on the assessment of our capital structure is taking place, including the debt equation. And this work, as this work is in progress, even if I wanted to share any view on the next steps at this moment, it would only be a theoretical exercise in futurology and something very irresponsible on my part.
Thank you, Zangari. Now it's very clear. And let me also open the floor to other questions from our investors, bankers, and analysts. I would like to remember all that you may send your question via webcast. And the first, second, third, and fourth question are from Anne Muni, Bank of America Securities Research. So the first one, during first quarter, Intersement Brazil was able to generate a small increase in adjusted EBITDA for the quarter year over year. I also see that the company registered a small decrease in volumes, but a smaller decline than the overall the industry. Registered price increases of 10% in the Northeast and 13% in the South, and saw a 10% increase in costs. So it sounds like the price increase helped offset higher costs, small weakness in volumes. The question is the following. I have been hearing that there has been a player in Southeast Brazil trying to capture market share by keeping prices low. Has Intersement seen this competition, and how has it affected the company, and how are you dealing with it? Intersement Brazil seemed to have a reasonable decent first quarter. Do you expect this to continue in the coming quarters, or do you expect additional weakness? Speaking of with others, no one is quite certain, although generally expectations, or maybe hopes, are for some stabilization during the year.
Well, I can take this one. Before anything, many thanks for your question, Anne. Yes, as I quickly mentioned before, although the Southeast is the region with the highest cement consumption and highest purchase power, it is the region with the lowest cement price. Perhaps it is due to the reason you pointed out on your question, especially in São Paulo, that there is fierce dispute for the market leadership by keeping prices low by two big players. At the same time, I guess the Brazilian cement industry has a good memory of what happened from 2015 to 2018, when cement players almost bled to death. I see these two as rational players, and they will not destroy shareholders' value to pump up volume. As I keep saying, I mean, to increase volume, it would be easier to be a charity house and just grant cement for free. In terms of impact for Intersement, It's true that prices in the Southeast region are running behind inflation. However, Intercement has a national footprint, so that the Southeast impact is being mitigated in our overall Brazilian portfolio. It should also be noted that the Midwest and South regions have prices running above costs, and we have 4 plants in those regions, which profit from the record harvest this year. On the top of that, we should also point out that Intercement Brazil portfolio improvement with products focusing on profitability and not market share, such as cement for technical construction channels.
Thanks, Paulo. Let's see the second question. Given the very strong domestic capital markets in Argentina, where all types of companies much weaker than Loma Negra are issuing debt, dollar linked and other, at extremely low rates, some zero or negative, is there some way Intercement could take advantage of this to lever up Loma Negra a little bit to generate some funds for Intercement? I know all about the exchange controls and the next to zero BCRA reserve problems, but I do see a few companies somehow getting hard dollars out of the country, and not just oil companies. I know amounts are not huge and tenors not long, but there has been a lot of issuance, like $5 billion last year. And it seems like investors are buying almost anything to stay headed in U.S. dollar. If I look at Loma Negra's first quarter leverage of 0.46 times, I would think that the net debt figure could go up by $150 to $250 million. I just wrote about a company with 8 times leverage that has been able to issue in the local market. I know Intercement did a transaction last year to get dividends, and the ownership percent might not be the most efficient way to do a transaction, but there is a lot of liquidity there, strangely enough. I would love to hear your thoughts, Paulo.
And yes, I mean, there are a few companies getting dollars out of Argentina, as you said, and Loma Negra is one of them. However, is structured in such a way without touching the international reserves of the Argentinian government. Last year, Loma Negra paid $126 million in dividends. And this year, Luma's shareholders have received something around $66 million in dividends so far. Also, yes, we do see some dollar index lines in Argentina with very low interest rates. At the same time, Loma Negra board believes that one of the best uses for the company's cash generation is remittance to shareholders. Therefore, Loma Negra shall continue to explore structures that allow optimization of its cash flow. In other words, we do see your point as a very valid one.
And any chance Brazilian development banks like BNDES would consider lend to Intercement? Longer tenor, matching cash flows, lower rates?
Well, in fact, last Friday, I had lunch with the head of SNEEC, and he mentioned that the National Cement Association will meet BNDES this week. The idea is to discuss ways in which the development bank would help the cement industry in a moment that the countries face this high level of interest rates. At the same time, Intercement has already indicated to BNDES its willingness to explore any long-term financing from BNDES to replace current lines, as the company does not need new money. At the same time, we all know that any transaction with BNDES takes a reasonable amount of time to be executed.
Okay, thank you. And the last question for Anne. I'm trying to understand better why working capital was so much higher year over year. I understand higher short-term thermal prices in Argentina, But were there other factors?
Certainly. In a very simple way, with the credit crunch started in Brazil with the Americanas case, Tercement Brazil lost some important lines of suppliers financing, so-called risco sacado, and receivable financing, or desconto de duplicatas. Therefore, the company had to use its own cash in order to fund such credit lines retraction. Just to give you an idea, in terms of risco sacado, the supplier's financing, the lines were reduced from almost 400 million reais to 100 million reais. Therefore, the company's working capital position suffered with those movements.
So next question comes from Jacob Steinfeld. Why is the reported EBITDA from Loma Negra, $68 million, is so different from the $50 million reported by Intercement?
Yeah, I guess, Zangari, you can talk on that one, but I guess it's important to realize that as inflation keeps going up, basically costs, the way that Loma Negra calculates its figures in dollars, because again, remember that the company is not obliged to report in dollars. They just do a kind of conversion using their peso figures into dollars. And therefore, for costs, they are not adjusted by inflation, and revenues are kind of more update, and therefore margins will tend to be higher by using that methodology. But somehow, Zangari, I guess you can give a bit more color here on the technical side too.
Yeah, maybe speaking a little bit more technically, it of course has to do with the way Loma Negra presents its figures in dollars. Note that for statutory reasons, Loma Negra is obliged to present its financials on pesos, Argentine pesos, something that is also accepted at the New York Stock Exchange. However, in order to give a better flavor of its figures in dollars for investors, as it may be a bit confusing to follow the high inflationary financials in pesos, the company takes its financials in pesos for any given period and convert them into US dollars using the historical pesos amount converted to US dollars by the average exchange rate. As you will note, Loma is using this methodology for years now, and it certainly provides some reasonable comparability in terms of Loma Negra's figures in US dollars. And by the way, when you see a longer period of time, you see that sometimes the difference is, as in this quarter, for Loma Negra reporting a higher amount than Intercement, and in some other periods it's the opposite, with Intercement reporting a higher figure. And on the other hand, at Intercement holding level, when we consolidate Loma Negra financials, we are obliged to follow IAS 21, meaning IFRS conversion rules for an inflationary environment. Therefore, we take Loma Negra financials in pesos, which is Loma's functional currency, and adjust the financials by inflation using the proper monetary adjustment as required by IAS 21 paragraph 42 to convert it to US dollars as the reporting currency. And we use the end of period exchange rate for that. In other words, as Intercement has the US dollars as its reporting currency, we have to follow the proper accounting rules from IAS. Needless to say that as inflation grows and the FX parity with inflation is decoupled, this discrepancy on both methodologies tends to increase. However, it's important, again, to note that the free cash flow result and ending cash position is the same for both methodologies. Hope it contributed a bit to understand the impacts of this high inflationary environment. And we apologize for such a distortion may be causing some kind of confusion from time to time.
Okay, I guess that I'm seeing here a lot of questions with regards to the bank debt and basically even the bonds, but I guess that we have already somehow addressed them, and especially with the banks, as it was informed, we are currently discussing with them. But parallel to that, there is a question from Sin from Redwood Capital. Is the $41 million the cash price for the Jeep business? This seems low. So wondering why management believed that the sale price at this level was attractive.
Maybe I can take this.
Yeah.
Actually, the sale price is not that one. As you or most of you may know, we are under a confidentiality agreement with the buyer that doesn't allow us to declare the buyer nor the price, but we have indicated that the price in terms of enterprise value was between 6 and 7 times that the adjusted EBITDA projection we have for this year, 2023, for Egypt, considering that by the fourth quarter last year, the deterioration of the Egyptian economy started impacting the business. And by December, EBITDA in Egypt was basically half of the one we reached in the previous year. So considering this kind of or this level of multiple and the macroeconomic scenario for the country, we really think the transaction was at attractive terms. And when considering what would be the net result for Intercement, one also needs to consider what was the net debt that was also discounted as part of the payment, along with those ordinary usual adjustments for any M&A transaction with regards to working capital and other debt-like items. So that's also to be considered when analyzing the financials of this first quarter. So next question comes from Esteban Arrieta from Balance. Hi, Esteban. He asks, first question is related to the asset held for sale in Africa. Could you explain how the payment waterfall would be like after the sale of those assets? Which debentures are paid first and what happens with the amount in excess of the 2023 debentures maturities? For $122 million. My second question is related to the exchange of the 24 notes. Are you thinking of using a cash component alongside the issuance of new notes? Maybe 10 cents in cash and the rest in new amortizing notes with higher coupons? And then a third question related to Loma Negra. We have mentioned in the past that leverage could go up to 2.5 times, but in the long term, for the end of 2023, what do we expect it to be? How much in dividends do we think we could bring into the Intercement holding during this year?
Yeah, let me try to go through that as we have using there.
The first one related to the waterfall.
Yeah, I guess that according to the indenture that we have on the bonds and also the ventures, any proceeds coming from asset divestment would be basically used in order to reduce debt. However, looking at the indentures of the ventures, they are even more restrict, saying that those proceeds should be started amortizing the ventures. That means that in the case of the sale of the African assets, we should go first to settle the bankers according to the indentures. And again, I guess that there's no difference between the debentures that are sitting at InterCement holding level or at InterCement Brazil. Therefore, from indentures point of view, the proceeds should be used to amortize both debentures. With regards to
the cash component for the 24
bonds. Yes, the bonds refinancing or even a cash component of 10 cents in cash. As we mentioned before, since now we do have advisors, you know, helping us to structure the best way forward. At this point in time, I'd say that anything that I could mention here would be just a guess. Therefore, I will refrain from commenting. But thanks for your suggestion. And finally, with regards to the leverage of Luma Negra going perhaps up to 2.5 times, again, I guess that even if the company took $133 million in debt in pesos locally, I guess the leverage is below 0.5 times. As you said, it's very, very true that we have room in there to go up. But at this point in time, I guess that we are still analyzing the best way to proceed, because we want to make sure that we also respect the local government, you know, FX restrictions. And therefore, anything that we do, we have to do without touching the international reserves.
Okay, thank you. We are seeing here there are a couple of questions regarding the cash position. So I will repeat it: as of the end of March, $183 million. And the breakdown was $28 million at InterCement Brazil, $93 million in Argentina, Loma Negra, $21 million at the African cluster, and $41 million at the corporate level. Another question from Gonzalo regarding what would be non-core assets that we have in Brazil that could be used for divestment, what would be the value of them and timing. Gonzalo, we have been working on a liability management plan for a long while now, and divesting from operational and non-core assets for this period. So we can expect that, again, in Brazil, you'd be working around some tax credits and also some properties that are non-core assets that could be divested in the short term. Maybe time for one last question from Jacob Ashmore. Hi, Jacob. So he asks, are you seeing any reversal in the working capital investment since the first quarter?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, we see that the Brazilian market somehow has at least stabilized, I would say, with regards to, you know, all the credit crunch that we had. In terms of InterCement Brazil, we see that we have one bank that restarted to extend credit line to InterCement Brazil. So that is a kind of a positive sign. We don't know if this is going to continue or not, but at least I guess that things are starting to move in the right direction.
Well, Paul and Zangari, Many thanks for this interesting fireside chat.
Thank you, Maria, and all for being with us this morning. See you next time.
Maria Zangari, pleasure to spend the morning with you and our investors and bankers and analysts. Many thanks to you all and see you in the next earnings call. Have a great week.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you all for joining today and have a pleasant day. Goodbye.